important.
That's it, exactly right, Daisy. That's it.
We are here.
That's it, we are here, exactly. You know, Hillel, he once said, if I'm here, everybody's here. Imani Khan, Hakol Khan. That's it. All right, that's it. We're ready. Okay, so we're moving on. What we're going to do today, I think, is actually finish Parshas Chukas. Now, as we went, this Parsha had many different events. Amongst them, as we saw, Miriam passed away. We had the Parah Aduma right at the beginning, Miriam passing away. We had the story with we had Aaron passing away. We had that serpent story. And now, at the end of Parshas Chukas, is actually, as we saw last week, because we were following in the with those maps, this is really the end of the 40 years of the Jewish people being in the desert, and they are almost about to, they're actually getting to the border of Eretz Yisrael, and that's really what happens at the end of this week's Parsha, is that they reach the part of the border where they're going to be crossing into Eretz Yisrael. The rest of the Chumash from Parshas Chukas actually all takes place there because Devarim is really Moshe Rabbeinu's long speech. So after here, there's only a few more Parshias till the end of really the story of the Jewish people in the desert, right? That's what it is. So Parshas Chukas is quite a big, if you want to say, of the history, of the, especially of the 40th year. And today we will see, as we saw last week, we already saw how they had this incredible miracle that happened to them when they were on the border of the country of Moav and the Emiri, right? Remember the Amorites. And the king of the Amorites was Sichon. But before they even got near the Amorites wanted to destroy the Jewish people. As we read last week, we read that story, and they devised this plan where they were hiding in those cracks in the mountains. And there's different opinions if the Jewish people were going underneath them, or if the Jewish, or perhaps the mountains came together and the Jewish people went on top of them without even being aware that these people had just been crushed, as we saw last week. So there's different opinions how it worked, but whichever way it was, Hashem made a miracle for the Jewish people without them even being aware of the miracle, and that's what we said. And then afterwards, right after the water from the Be'er, from the well that they had with them, showed them, demonstrated the tremendous miracle by carrying the bones, the whatever, all the different parts of the bodies of the enemies that had been crushed. And then the Jewish people realized, oh my gosh, look what just happened. And therefore, as we said, they sang a special song of gratitude to Hashem for saving them from this tremendous miracle. But the song is not really a song of gratitude as such. It is a song of gratitude, but it more emphasizes the tremendous miracle of the well itself, which is interesting. And that's what we want. It was a bit difficult to understand where that came in over here, because the well had been with them for 40 years. Why all of a sudden are they singing a song about the well? So I just want to repeat one beautiful point, the way the Svarnu brings out very beautifully. And he says, really what happened over here was, here they saw how the well was so miraculous. What do I mean by miraculous? Because if we understand the story, as we said, that they were going to be crossing perhaps any way that they could in this area between these two mountains, but Hashem moved the mountains together, thereby crushing those people. The Jewish people, therefore, went over on top of the mountain which had come together without them even being aware that originally it hadn't been together. What happens is that if you think about it that way, then the crushing of the people and the whatever, all the blood and all the whatever, it goes down, right? It's underneath. So the water of the well, what happened with the well was, if the well was picking up those pieces, it means that the well went underneath first and then climbed up to them, right? That's what it means, because they saw it on top, right? It came to them where they were on top of the mountain, which is exactly the opposite of what water does. Water doesn't go from below to above. Water goes from above to below, right? That's the normal way water goes, and most things go downward, but especially water, right? So we say the fact that the water climbed up to reach them higher up shows that this water is not ordinary water. This well is no ordinary well. This is a miraculous well. And what was the idea? The idea was to show the Jewish people and Moshe and Aaron, it's interesting, that this is not natural. Why did it have to show Moshe and Aaron this? Because as we saw in this week's parsha, this was also in the parsha. I mean, in the parsha that we were learning in Chukas, that's where Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock. And why did he hit the rock? Because the truth is, that's the natural thing to do. When you hit a rock, water can come out. Talking to a rock is supernatural. Hashem wanted Moshe to demonstrate to the Jewish people that their whole existence is supernatural. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do it in that way. So therefore, it says Hashem had to show them now that their whole existence is supernatural by showing them that the water of this well goes up and it doesn't go down, besides for the crazy miracle that just happened to them. So in other words, it's in a way almost a little bit of a shtech, if you want to say, for Moshe and Aaron to show them, you see, the whole existence is supernatural. You could have spoken to that rock. This well is supernatural. The Jewish people's existence is supernatural. And that's why Moshe and Aaron's names are not mentioned, but they're just hinted to in the song. Because the truth is that they were the ones who brought all these miracles. So really, the Jewish people should have mentioned them, but we couldn't, because it would have been a little bit of an insult to them. But Hashem was bringing out to the Jewish people and to Moshe and Aaron that their whole existence is miraculous. And why I'm stressing that is because it's leading up to where they're coming. They're coming to the border. They're going to enter the land of Israel. And they must enter the land of Israel. Good morning, Lisa. With not stam the conviction, but with the realization in such a real way that there's no way of going into the land of Israel unless you go with miracles. It's the only way to do it. That's why it happened this way. So they sang this special song. This was a song to show, to demonstrate that they internalized this fact, that they realized that this well that had just shown them this miracle itself was a miracle, meaning our whole existence is miraculous. And when we enter the land of Israel, we will be entering with these miracles and realizing that our whole life is based on miracles. This is why it happened this way. So then just one small quick thing before we move on, because today we're going to see what happens now after they've crossed this and they had this amazing miracle just happen to them, where the Amorites thought that they could destroy the Jewish people and Hashem proved otherwise. But nevertheless, as we said, and it's quite amazing, we'll see it over and over again, Hashem can send absolute clear messages. But you know what? You have to be willing to take them. You have to be willing to see them. And that goes for us, and it goes for the nations of the world. We see that all the time. It's just so black and white. Some things that look so clear to us, and you think, how could nobody else see it that way? Because they don't want to see it that way. Meaning to say that even though Hashem made such miracles for the Jewish people each time, every time one of the nations tried to start up, Hashem miraculously saved the Jewish people. It didn't for some reason dissuade the next nation from trying. And even the same nation that had just got such a big clap tried again, because they just don't want to see it. I guess you might say their hatred overrode everything. And as we said, this is all playing out again. It's all the same. But let's see here, just before we go there, I just want to show you one more small thing. In the psukim, you don't have the psukim in front of you because I didn't give you the last week's sheet, but I just want to show you something nice that, as we said, this song of the well, which is to demonstrate that the Jewish people realize that their whole life is miraculous and they're thanking God for the well and for the miracles, it's also, as we said, a hint to something a little bit deeper on a spiritual sense, that they're thanking Hashem for the Torah. Because we know Torah is compared to water, first of all, it's our life source, but also Torah is like a well. What does it mean it's like a well? So a well, the truth is, comes from deep in the ground. But what happens with the well is that initially a well is covered. You don't even know that a well is there. And then if you dig, what you find is that the water is there. And if you dig clear enough, the water will actually come up, right? In other words, you will be able to access the water that is there, that has been there the whole time, but until then you were not able to access it. And this is the same thing that happens with us and the Torah. And it says, the Aruch Haim HaKadosh actually explains it into the words of the song, but he says, initially, the well was covered over. The world wasn't aware of the Torah. Who came first to make the world aware? were the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And this week's parsha is so full of how Avraham tried to spread the one God into the world, the idea of one God, and how Hashem helped him, and he did actually... He was able to influence many, many people. But the one who really, one of the Avos who really brought, if you want to say more, the idea of Torah was Yaakov. We say Yaakov used to sit and learn Torah. What do we find with Yaakov? Do you remember when he went to meet Rachel and Leah? It says that the well was covered with the what? With a very big rock. And actually the pasuk describes that by Yagel Yaakov, that he actually removed that big rock. And what happened? The water came up, right? It rose up. This signifies that Yaakov is the one that's actually removing all the blockages to enable the world to be able to receive the Torah. Now, the world has not yet received the Torah in the time of Yaakov. We know that. That's why the water is still there deep in the well, but it's just slowly coming up. Who is the two, really, who bring the water really into the world? It's Moshe and Aaron, right? They are the ones that actually enable the world to really learn Torah by bringing the Torah into the world. That's the next step. But then what happens after that? Throughout the generations, we have many great tzaddikim that follow after Moshe and Aaron. And that actually also is hinted to in some of the words. I'll just show you, like it says, first of all, Be'er Chafru HaSarim. Sarim are the nobles, referring to Moshe and Aaron. That's the Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And they karuha, they hewed it. Then the Divei Ha'am, that's Moshe and Aaron. And then it says, B'mechaykeik b'mishanoisam, through a lawgiver with their walking stick. But we might explain b'mishanoisam, sometimes l'sha'en is to lean on. Because all the future generations, all the great tzaddikim that came after Moshe and Aaron, even though they enabled us to understand the Torah much better, because you can't understand the written Torah without the oral Torah, but they were leaning on the Torah of Moshe and Aaron. And every later generation has to lean on the previous generation. They can't make up something from new. We can't accept it if it's new. It has to be something which is based on the previous, on the original source. And that's why it's written that way. And then it says, Umi Midbar Matana. What is Umi Midbar Matana? So Midbar is the desert. That's the concept of humility. As we say, the desert doesn't have anything growing. It's not something that can boast of great things happening. So Umi Midbar Matana, the Torah is only accessible with humility. And then we have Umi Matana Nachliel. Nachliel in this context means a nachala, an inheritance. What's the idea? We are the inheritance of God, and God becomes our inheritance, meaning the connection. The Torah brings about such a deep connection between the Jewish people and Hashem that goes both ways. Hashem connects to us, we connect to Hashem, and we become Hashem's, so to speak, chosen, single, unique nation. That's what happens through us learning the Torah. And then it says, it concludes with saying that Umi Nachliel Bamais. Bamais is the concept of a bama, is something which is a little bit raised above. Usually it's like a mizbeach, like an altar, but it's above the ground. The idea being that we are raised, we are elevated, we become obviously more, I don't know, much better people through Torah. But not only that, we are elevated to the point, and it says it beautifully, Ubebamais Hage, that we go to the highest peak. And this is the idea that a Jew, through learning Torah, has the ability to bring eternity to his life, meaning he elevates not only his neshama, but his body. And this is a very beautiful idea that it says that we have one case of it, Elio Anavi, who actually went on high and went with his body. In other words, he purified himself through his learning so much that even his body was able to enter the higher realms. And we know an interesting thing, obviously the body can't enter to the highest realms because it's physical. There's a fascinating thing told about Eliyahu HaNavi. You know, Eliyahu HaNavi is the one we always say, he came, you know, people see him. What does that mean? Because he actually has, we can't really imagine what that means, but it's like you imagine a cloak or a coat that you hang in the front closet. Eliyahu HaNavi hangs his body somewhere between heaven and earth, and when he needs it, he puts it back on, comes down here, and then when he goes back up, he sort of hangs hangs it back up. But the idea being his body is so pure that it can even be hanging there almost in heaven, if you want to say, in that sense. But what's the lesson for us? The lesson for us is even more, that in truth, through the learning of Torah, throughout the generations, we reach such an elevated height that we will reach very, very soon where there will be Tchias HaMesim. There will be not only Mashiach, but Tchias HaMesim. And that's the idea that the Jew's body is also eternal. Our neshama is eternal, and our body will be resurrected. And this is all shown in this Song of the Well. The Jewish people are singing to the, if you want to say, to the beautiful gift that Hashem has given us, the Torah. Okay, we're going to leave that there. That's last week. Now, we're going to move on. As we saw last week, so the Amorites, we would think, let's just see something very simple. We would think that they were knocked. They're crushed, right? These people are crushed in the rocks. They're going to give up the fight. They don't give up any fights. Nobody's giving up fights when they hate us. So let's see what happens. And it's quite sad, but anyway, more than just sad. Okay, I want to just see, okay, I have to put away these papers because I want to see the new ones. Okay, so in front of you, you have the map. And I just want to show you something quickly on the map. I'm going to share the screen now here. I know the map is not so clear here, but doesn't matter. Let me share. Okay, so what happens here is now the Jewish people, as we see on your map, you see the number 4? That's, you see the Nachal Arnon. You can see the pink Emiri. It's very big and pink. Well, right under it is Nachal Arnon. Well, that's where they crossed now, right? That's where this miracle just happened, at Nachal Arnon. Now they are going to go to the land of the Amorites. You can see that number 7 is Arvais Mayav. That's where they're going to be crossing. That's the last place across from, that's where the, right across from number 7 is actually Yerichai. That's the Jordan that they're going to cross into the land of Israel with Yahushua. But here they have to still go around the land of the Amorites because the Amorites don't let them in. But we'll see in a minute what happens, if they actually enter or not. Okay, just two important things I want to share with you. And we're going to see it a little bit inside. So on your sheet, you can see there's a few nations. We mentioned them last week. We said that there was the country of Edom, all the way on the bottom there. Then we have Moav, and we have Ammon. It doesn't show Ammon here, but Ammon is right near Moav. And then we have the Amorites, and then all the way on the top it says Habashan. Do you see? That's where Oig, the giant Oig is. Now, the Jewish people are not permitted to conquer certain of these countries. We did mention this last week, but it's important to remember which countries are they not permitted to conquer. So Edom, because Edom is from Esav, which is our relative, whatever that means, up until the time of Mashiach. Then we will. So Edom, and then there was Ammon and Moav. Who are Ammon and Moav? Who are they? Exactly. They come from Lot. Everything's such a show. This is this week's parsha. What's the story with Lot? Who's Lot?
He's Abraham's
nephew. Okay, excellent. Abraham's nephew. Interestingly, that's what we know him as, but he's even more. He's actually Abraham's brother-in-law also. You know, because he's Sarah's brother, right? Because there was 3 brothers there. There was Haran, Nachar, and Abraham. Abraham went into the fire and was saved. Haran thought he would try. It didn't work for him. He was burned. But Haran had a few children. And Haran's children, one of them was Sarah, and one of them was Lot. So Sarah marries Abraham, and Lot, who's the other child, actually joins Avraham's family. He joins his uncle, who is now his brother-in-law's family. And he leaves with Avraham to enter into the land of Israel, as we know, right? That's in this week's parsha, in Parshas Lech Lecha. Now, what happened with Lot? Did he stay with Avraham? No. Why not? Okay. Right, because he wasn't such a great guy. Okay, so it says he was involved in thievery, whatever it was. He wasn't so honest. He couldn't stay with Avraham. So they split. And yet Avraham still kept a sense of responsibility for him. And that's what we find in this week's parsha, that what happened with Lot was that Lot was actually captured. That's one of the stories in this week's parsha, with the stories of the 4 kings and the 5 kings. It's quite a complicated story because there seems to be this war that went back and forth, back and forth. 4 kings, 5 kings, 5 kings, 4 kings. Bottom line is, in one of those wars, Lot is captured. Who comes to tell Avraham that Lot has been captured? How does Avraham even know? Do you remember? Interesting. What? It's fascinating. Oik. Oig, who we already have from last week's Bnei Minim, we'll see. Oig comes to tell Avram that he managed to escape. He's a fugitive from this war. He was also attacked, but he escaped. And you know who's still a captive? Light. So what does Avram do? He drops everything and he goes to war to free Light. Okay? Everything's like this. It's unreal. Anyways, all the same. Okay, so he's going to free Light. He's going. He frees Light. So now, just to remember the important characters here. Aig, where does Aig originate from? Who is he? Okay, we know him as a giant. That's what we know about him. Where does he come from?
Do you remember? I'm right or wrong, but this is what I would think of River Gordon saying. The angels said, why do you give them the Torah? We can do better. And the angels came down and they were worse than the
Exactly. Yes. Okay, so interesting. It's not only the Torah, but the angel said to God, why did you create man in this world? You should have sent us into the world. Look at people, they're so bad. That was in the time of Noach. They were bad, right? So Hashem says, what are you talking about? You have no idea, he said to the angels. You don't know what a Yetzirah is. You have no idea what it is when you're tempted. You're not in, you know, it's easy to judge from up here. So the angels say, no, we know. So Hashem sent down these angels. That's what it says. When the angels came down into this world, and of course, in this world, they also get a Yetzirah. That's the way the world works. They were even worse than man. And amongst the children of the angels are a few giants, Sichaim and Aig. Right? So, Aig is there. Now, that is before the Mabul. How does Aig survive? That's the famous Medrash. Yeteva. Whatever that means. It's hard for us to understand because the water was supposed to be boiling water. But somehow or other, miraculously, he survives. He survives the flood. He's not a good guy, but he still survives the flood. Something interesting happens. After the flood, we know that after Noach, there's 10 generations, and then comes Avraham, and Aig lives a very long life because he still has that angel part to him. In other words, he has that little bit of eternity to him, so he lives a very, very, very long life because Aig lives from before the time of the Mabul until the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, until the Jewish people are entering the land of Israel. So that is 1,000 years because the Mabul was in the year 1656, and they enter the land of Israel in 2488. So it's about 1,000 years that Aig lives, it's true. Although it's interesting because don't forget that before the Mabul, people did live that long. So it wasn't so unusual, but after the Mabul, things changed and people's lives were cut much, much shorter. We know that. I mean, Yitzchak lived the longest of the three fathers. He lived till 180. So that was more the lifespan, was somewhere between 150, 180, 120, whatever it was. But Aig lived 1,000 years. One more important thing that we have to remember, so we mentioned Aig, and now Light, right? Light is Avraham's nephew. So Aig also has an interplay with Light in that he's the one that tells Avraham about Light being captured, and therefore Avraham is able to save Light. Just to keep in mind one important thing, when Aig runs to Avraham to tell him that Light has been captured, what is Aig's motivation?
To help Sarah.
Exactly. As we see, I don't even want to say it. I mean, we could all understand nothing has changed. When you're talking about, unfortunately, some people, they always have to have an ulterior motive. It's not for the good of the other, whatever, for the Jewish people. He doesn't care. I don't want to use another language. He doesn't give a hoot about Avraham and about Lot. But he thinks Avraham's going to go fight. These nations are strong. He knows because he's just experienced them. And he's going to be killed and he's going to have Sarah. That's not how it played out. So, but the bottom line is he helped a little bit. We'll see why that's important. Another important thing to remember is also from this week's Parsha, Parsha's Lech Lecha. When Avraham gets to the land of Israel, right? As we know, he went there with his wife Sarah and with Lot and with all the people that they had converted. Very nice. But what happens when he gets to the land? We're told in this week's Parsha, as he enters, immediately, not almost immediately, there is a famine, right? The famous famine. What does Avram do? He has to go down to Egypt. Okay, right? Because there's no food to eat. When he gets to Egypt, what does he realize? He has a problem on his hands. The problem is his wife is too beautiful. Okay? And the Egyptians are not people that he trusts. So he tells Sarah to say what? That she is his sister. Now, light is going with Avraham down to Egypt. Mm-hmm. And it says an interesting thing. I mean, we would think of course, but again, nothing is of course. The Torah says that when they crossed the border and the border guards were questioning Avraham, and Avraham was saying, she is my sister, light didn't say a word. He didn't pipe up and say, it's not his sister, it's my sister, it's his wife. No, he didn't. And that's considered something meritorious for light. Whatever. You think it's such a big deal, but whatever. I guess on his level, it's a big thing. And therefore, interestingly, so because he's Avraham's nephew, and because he didn't pipe up and say anything, what happens is that his descendants get a special protection. And the protection is that we are not supposed to inherit their land until the time of Mashiach. Okay, but there's interesting. Light, as we know, in next week's parasha, when Sodom is destroyed, Light lives with his daughters, the famous Medrash. That's how the two children are born, Amain and Mayav. The first daughter, the oldest daughter, named her son Mayav. What does Mayav mean? Why did she name him Mayav? Such a strange name. Exactly. Mayav. He is born from my father. In other words, she had zero shame. She didn't even care. She just... It's incredible, huh? It's from my father. Fine. Amain, it's my nation. So she didn't. She hid it a little bit. So it says, because of that, Hashem takes everything into account. So we're not allowed to conquer these countries. However, there's a difference between how we treat the nation of Mayav and how we treat the nation of Amain. The nation of Amain, we are not allowed to go to war with them. We're not even allowed to antagonize and scare them and tease them, so to speak. Nothing. Whereas Mayav, what?
Just stay away from them.
Stay away from them, exactly, exactly. But Mayav, we're not allowed to conquer them and not go outright war, but we can antagonize them. We can scare them a little bit. We can show them that we're around and that they shouldn't think that they can start up with us. So it's a difference. There is a difference. I just want to share something with you. All these nations, they're not the same now. At the time of Sancheiriv, you know, much later on, he mixed everybody up. When it came to that time, that was at the end of the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, he mixed all the nations up. So that's why we don't know which nations. That's why we're permitted to fight with any of these nations if they dare start up with us. There's no problem with that. But in those times, this was the rule. Okay, so now the Jewish people have these nations, Edom, Moab, and Amain, that they are not going to actually conquer. But the Amorites and Bashan, Oig Melech HaBashan, there's no problem with us conquering their land. And the truth is, what ends up happening is, even though Moshe Rabbeinu didn't necessarily want to conquer those lands right now, they did end up, we'll see why. But what ends up happening is that we learn later that the 2.5 tribes, remember Reuven, Gad, and the half of the tribe of Menashe, end up settling in the land of the Amori. Those are what we call across the Jordan, which is now Jordan. And those are supposed to be very beautiful, lush lands, and that's where they actually remain, end up staying. But to understand why we actually conquered them and why we actually went to war with them, let's see the psukim of today. Okay, so I know I made extra, we're going to... I'm not sure where my sheets are here. Okay, I'm sorry. Go to, I know it's a bit confusing because I don't want to read all. Go to what says page 261. Sorry, 261, sorry. I think it's the third page because I told you these Rashis already. So we'll just go straight to page 261 and see the psukim, see what happens here. Okay. Okay. So, Vayishlach Yisrael Malachim. So, Yisrael, which means the Jewish people, sent emissaries to who? To Sichain Melech HaEmori saying. Okay, as we saw. Again, just keep in mind that the Jewish people were aware. They weren't not aware. They were aware that the Amorites had tried to kill them. They knew it, right? Because they had seen the bones and everything in the well. And they had sang a song about it. And nevertheless, they still reach out amicably. We'd say, why? I don't know. But anyways, they do. And they ask them nicely, what do the messengers say to the king of Amorite? And I'm going to come back to this in a minute. They say, Ebra ba'artzecha, let us pass through your land. Because really the goal now is to get to the land of Israel. They don't necessarily need these lands now. Okay? But Laina, as we saw before, Lainita, remember they did it with Edom. Edom didn't let them. Lainita Bisade, Ubikarim, right? We will not turn off to the field or to the vineyard. Lainishta me be'er, we're not going to drink the waters of the well. Bederech hamelech nelech, which means we're going the king's road, meaning we're going to go on the highway. We're not going to trample your field. We're not going to do you any damage. Not only that, we're only going to bring you financial profits. It's everything is exactly the same. What do they respond? And he says, Ad asher navar gvulech, until we pass through your land. So of course, in Pasuk Chav Gimel, V'loi nosan sichan es Yisrael avar begvuloi. Sichan says, nah, what do you think? I should let you come through my land? Of course not. He doesn't give them permission. But not only doesn't he give them permission to pass through the land peacefully, as the Jewish people wanted, V'yeesayv sichan es kol amay. Sichan assembled his entire people. Vayetze likras Yisrael hamidbara, and he goes out to against the Jewish people in the desert. Again, let's not forget the Jewish people were not threatening him. They didn't want anything from him yet. They wanted to pass through his land. Perhaps later they might have fought with him, I'm not saying, but right now they didn't want anything. He comes, his response immediately, war. He's fighting against them and he gathers all his people. They come out to the desert. We're going to come back. And what happens? Vayava Yahatza, and he arrives at a place, Yahatza, Vayilachem be Yisrael, and they waged war against Yisrael. What happens? Vayakehu Yisrael lefichareb, and Yisrael smote him with the sword. Vayirash es arza, this is what has to happen now, this part, everything up until now happens, but now we need this part to happen. They smote him with the edge of the sword and took possession of his land. May Arnon ad Yabik, and it gives the borders, it was quite a big piece of land that the Jewish people were able to take over. Ad b'nei Amin, until, like, as we say, the borders of Amin, because that were not permitted. Ki oz gvul b'nei Amin, because the border of Amin was strong. What does it mean it was strong? That they can't fight with them? They're too strong? Well, Sichon was also strong. No. What was the strength of B'nai Amin? The fact that we're not permitted. Not the initial strength. The fact that Hashem told us we can't fight with them. Otherwise, we would have been able to. So we don't cross the border. But I want to show you something else before we go back into one or two Rashis. I want to show you something very interesting, beautiful that Hashem did for the Jewish people, besides for making us successful in the war, and obviously being able to take over this country of these people who are such a terrible people, who will not even allow us to come through and just pass through and buy their water and buy their, you know, their produce. Vayikach Yisrael es kol ha'arim ha'ele, the Jewish people took over all of these cities. Vayeshev Yisrael b'chol Arei ha'emori, and the Jewish people lived in all of the cities of the Amorites. And then it gives us an interesting thing, Becheshbain. Cheshbain is the name of the capital city. U'bechol b'nai seha, and so to speak, all of its suburbs, all of its daughters. Why? Why does he mention Cheshbain? It's very fascinating. Ki Cheshbain ir Sichon melech ha'emori. Because Cheshbain is the city of Sichon, meaning the capital, right? Sichon's the king, and he made Cheshbain his capital. Why are we mentioning this? Who nilcham b'melech mayav harishain? It's telling us some fascinating history that Sichon fought with the earlier king of Mayav, vayikach es kol artzai, and he took his whole land. Let's see why we have to know that. Miyodai ad Arnon, from his hands until Arnon. Now, what's going on here? So it's interesting. Okay, the Jewish people are not permitted to conquer the land of Mayav, right? That they're not permitted. That's out of bounds. That's Yulaitz. So what does Hashem do? Hashem does something amazing. He gets Sichon, the king of the Amorites, to fight a war with Mayav. Now, he conquers some of Mayav, including quite a large portion of Mayav gets conquered, and in that is the city of Cheshbain, which initially probably was the capital by Mayav. They first destroy it, right? The Amorites destroy it, but then they rebuild it as their beautiful capital. Now, what has happened now? Now that this land has changed hands, it doesn't belong to Mayav anymore. Now the Jewish people can inherit it. Do you understand? So Hashem, it's amazing what Hashem does. First of all, he makes the other people fight for the Jew. In other words, it's like we don't have to fight that war, so to speak. Well, we can't, but he gives us a much bigger inheritance. So not only is it that they were able to inherit that land, but we see that Sichaim rebuilt that city in a beautiful way. And when they fought the war, Sichaim took his people out, right? Meaning that this land is not destroyed. They fought in the desert. So when the Jewish people go in, whoa, it's magnificent. Look at this. We have a land that Sichaim has just rebuilt, and now it's ours. So it's an incredible thing that's happening here. And the Psukim make sure for us to understand the tremendous kindness that Hashem has done for them. I want to just go back to one pasuk before we continue. Right at the beginning, sorry, go to page, the first page that we read, 260, which one is it? 261, right? I just want to show you something interesting. It says, Vayishlach Yisrael Malachim, that the Jewish people sent messengers to Sichaim. Interesting, because in another pasuk it says, Vayishlach Moshe Malachim, that Moshe sent messengers. And Rashi, this is a very beautiful Rashi. You'll see in a minute, it's a Rashi that many, that is very, very liked by Chassidim. And you'll see in a minute why. It's a very beautiful one. It says like this. So if you look in Rashi 21, it says, Ubemokim Acher, in another place, Taila Hashlichas B'Moshe. The Pasuk hangs, so to speak, the delegation tells us that who attributes the sending of the messengers to Moshe. And it brings a Pasuk, Ve'eshlach Malachim Emidbar Kademais, which means I sent, Moshe said, I sent messengers from the wilderness of Kademais. And we find another similar kind of things, contradiction. Moshe sent emissaries, and then it says about Yiftach that Yisrael sent emissaries. The bottom line is, who's sending it? Is it Moshe or is it the Jewish people? So Rashi says something very beautiful. He says that these psukim need each other. And we're going now to page 262, if you look into Rashi. Ze noyel v'ze peiseach, one locks and the other one opens. They teach us, Shem Moshe hu Yisrael, that Moshe Rabbeinu is the Jewish people, v'Yisrael hei Moshe, and the Jewish people is Moshe, to tell us what? That Nasi Hadar, the generation's leader, who Kichol Hadar, is like the entire generation, Ki HaNasi Hu HaKol, because the leader is everything. What it shows here is something very beautiful, that the leader, meaning in our case, of course, Moshe, is so connected to the Jewish people, he's like the heart of the Jewish people. And it doesn't matter if it's Moshe, if it says Moshe sending the Jewish people, because it's the same thing. Moshe and the Jewish people are one. We explain, and Tanya explains, that the leader of the generation actually has a neshama klolus, a general neshama, which incorporates all of our neshamas. That's why we feel such a deep connection, and that's why the leader has the ability to actually daven and intercede on our behalf, because we have a very deep, deep, deep connection to the leader of the generation, who at that time was Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, interesting why he mentions it over here, but we know that Moshe will pass away not in too much longer from here, but this was the Moshe Rabbeinu that they all loved. And even over here, even though this is a new generation that's going to enter the land of Israel, they still have a deep connection to Moshe. And while he was still there, all these incredible miracles were taking place in such an amazing way. So let's go on now and understand. I want to understand a little bit more about this story now. So now they're, as we said, the Amorites are fighting, and they are, they're gone. They're conquered. I want to go back to the Pesukim, because we're just going to read this. It's a bit poetic, but we'll read, just as we say, we're going to finish today the parasha. So I just want to show you, if we go back, we were on page 264, because now it says like this, Al-Kain. Now we have an interesting poetry. It says Al-Kain, and what we're talking about here is the fact that the Amorites conquered Moab earlier. There seems to be a poem written about it. And what's the poem? Al kein yomru hamishalim. That's why the mishalim, meaning the poets, would say, Bayu Cheshbon, come to Cheshbon. We said that was the capital city. Tibane, let it be built. Visikainen, and established. Ir Sichaim, the city of Sichaim, because he reestablished it. When he took it from Moav, he made it his own. Ki eish yotza mecheshbein, for a fire has gone forth from Cheshbon. Lahava mikirya Sichaim, a flame from the city of Sichaim. Achla Ar, it has consumed Ar, which is also a name of a city in Moav. Baalei Bamais Arnain, the masters of Arnain's heights. It just continues. It's a poem, but I'll show you something beautiful in a minute about this poem. But he says, Oy lecha Moav, woe is to you, Moav, avadata am, you are lost. Am Chemosh, the people of Chemosh. Chemosh is their god, their idol. They put their hopes in their idol, but we know it didn't help because we see that Sichon was able to win their war, right? Win over them. So even though they hoped in their idol and they went to war with Sichon, nevertheless, Sichon vanquished and he was able to overcome Moab and took over not the entire thing, but quite a large portion of the land of Moab. Nosan Bon of Platim, he delivered his sons as fugitives. Ubnoisav Bashvis, Lemelech and Mayri Sichon and his daughters into captivity to the king of the Amorites. In other words, these are the children of Moab. They were taken into captive by the Amorites because the Amorites won the war. Just something very, very, very interesting. It says, I saw beautiful Mefarish where I just want to show you on that first pasuk of this poem, it says, Bayu Cheshbin. So it says, Yaimru HaMishalim Bayu Cheshbin. What are the Mishalim who come to Cheshbin? The Mishalim are the people who actually live life in a deep way, which means people who contemplate. Those are people who think about things. That's a mashal, is like a poetry, but it's also the idea of thinking about the meaning, the layers of things. People who think about what is life all about. So they come and they make an accounting, a cheshbin, and what do they figure out? They figure out that there is two ways of living our life. Either we live our life by what immediately seems good. So that would be not necessarily the way Hashem wants us to live our life, but things which give us immediate gratitude, immediate gratification. So like anything we want to do, we do, and then we pay afterwards, or we live our life the other way, where sometimes it's a little bit of not so comfortable. It might not be something that we would initially choose, but we do it anyways because we make the proper cheshbin, we make the proper accounting, that it's more worthwhile to have something that's a little bit difficult initially if it's going to reap benefits after. And that obviously means choosing a life which is of a higher moral ground. And it says, what happens to people who live a life of cheshbin? Tibane v'sikainen. They build the world and they establish the world, meaning they build the world, as we understand, a world of goodness, a world that can exist, and sikainen means they establish it for eternity. So they establish it that should actually have stability, and they also have eternity, and they go to Olam Haba. So in other words, it has a lot of deep meanings, the idea being that we have to take in like a lot more depth into our life and not just live superficially. You can see that these people that we're talking about lived quite superficially, and it was all about who was the stronger one and who was able to conquer who. And ultimately, it was all for the benefit of the Jewish people, and they didn't even realize it. So when Sichon, if you think about it, put so much effort into building Cheshbon and to building the cities and to waging that war, it was all for the sake of the Jewish people, and he didn't really benefit. He benefited temporarily. Okay, I want to go on because I want to see what happens next in the story. Okay, the mashal continues, the poetry continues, one more pasuk. It says, V'niram avad cheshbin ad divine. Their sovereignty was lost from cheshbin and it was removed from divine. V'nashim ad neifach, and we laid waste until neifach, ad midvei, up until midvei. So in other words, showing how the Jewish people felt that they were able to conquer the Amorites, even though, and actually this was really more the Amorites conquering Moab, and then the Jewish people take over. Now, I want to show you something interesting that happens next. Vayeshev, the next pasuk says, Vayeshev Yisrael Be'eretz HaMeiri, the Jewish people settled in the lands of the Amorites. Now, just again, putting in context, we have just fought a war that we didn't start, okay? We didn't start it, but we fought it. And we were successful, very successful. You would think that the neighboring nation, which happens to be, after the Amorites come, Bashan, which is Oig, Melech HaBashan, this big giant, he is there. You would think that the nation of Bashan would hear, and what would they do? Have some kind of peace treaty, like give up, you know what I mean? Like just give up. What happens? Look at this, amazing. Vayishlach Moshe, and Moshe Rabbeinu sends out Liragel Es Yazer to spy out the cities of Yazer, Vilakdu B'nai Seha, and they captured its suburbs, because this was just on the outskirts of the Amorites. Okay, so we see even more conquering from the Jewish people. They are really fortified. They're strong. Okay, what happens next? Vayifnu, and they turn, because their goal is to get to Israel. They're not stopping here. Vayalu derech haBoshan, right? So now they turned and descended by the way of Boshan. If you saw on your map, that's the next country right on top. And what happens? Vayetze oig melech haBoshan likrasam. He doesn't even give them a chance. He goes out to greet the Jewish people. Likrasam hu v'chol amoy, him and his whole nation, la milchama. Immediately for war. He's set for war. Nothing. There's nothing there. There's not even a second of thought that what am I doing? Am I crazy? No, I'm going to war. He's strong. It's true he's a giant, but he thinks he's going to vanquish them. And the place that it's called is Edra'i. That's the place. That's a battle. Now I want to just show you something absolutely beautiful before we go to the next pasuk. This is so magnificent. I say this just should happen now. I want to show you... Nothing has changed. Oh, it says it before. Okay, something very amazing it says. It says that what happened was with Sichain and with him, what happens with Oig, he takes his whole nation and he gathers them, right? And he goes out and he is going to fight with Moshe. Sichain did that with the Amorites and Oig does it with Bashan. Why? You would think that's worse because it's a much stronger army. If you go, because it says like this, Rashi says, the Medrash tells us something magnificent. If the Jewish people would have had to enter and then fight small wars all over on the ground, as we know, much more difficult, much more challenging. If they, the king gathers all of his people, his whole army in one place, and the Jewish people have one big battle and they win, well, then when they enter the land, it's empty from the soldiers. Easy. Only people who are left, women and children, no problem. Take it over easily. And that's what Hashem did. He put into the minds of these kings this idea to gather their whole army in one place so that the Jewish people can fight them in one place, a much cleaner, easier, I mean, it's not easy, it was a difficult, but it was a miraculous fight where afterward they would not have to go and have skirmishes in each and every town and village. It's quite an incredible miracle again. And it's amazing. That's us. We just need it now. Whatever. Other ways. Okay. Anyways, let's see. I just want to show you something beautiful, though. Because this also, even though everything we're talking miracles, so you would think miracles, miracles. So then there would be no fear, right? The Jewish people should have no fear. But look at the next. This is so magnificent. I want to show you the next pasuk. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Al tira oisai. Do not be afraid of him. Moshe? Afraid? Of who is he afraid? Of Oig? Why is he afraid of Oig? He just fought Sichain, and they were successful beyond, right? They had incredible success. And Moshe knows, he's always, well, I mean, if we say we learned Shara B'tochen, I'm sure Moshe was the master of B'tochen. What's he afraid of? So what is it? Let's see what he says. And Hashem has to come. Obviously, if Hashem's telling him not to be afraid, it means he's afraid. And Hashem promises him, Ki biyotcha nasati, but I'll give him into your hands. Ve'es kol amay and his whole nation. Ve'es artsoy and his land. Ve'asisa loyin, you will do to him. Ka'asher asisa l'sichain melech ha'emayri. Just like you did to Sichain melech ha'emayri, asher yeshev b'cheshben, that lives in Cheshben. In other words, showing him, as we need a lot of times, the reassurance from our previous successes. When we reflect, as people did now, on the Six-Day War, and you think miracles, we could happen again. We say, yes, it could happen if it happened, if we experienced it once. Why shouldn't we experience it again? But why was Moshe afraid? So the Rashi tells us something very, and the Medrash tells us something incredible. The reason Moshe was afraid was he thought maybe Oig has some merit that would stand up to him and that would make him maybe successful or make the battle difficult. What was the merit that Oig might have had? We mentioned it earlier. What did Oig do when Lot was captured? He ran to tell Avram, right? So if Oig ran to tell Avraham, that means he went out of his way and he told Avram that Lot was captured. Moshe thought, then he has a merit. Who says I'm going to be successful this time? Because he has a schus. what Moshe wasn't aware of, what was Og's intention? Negative to begin with. He has no merit. Because his negative intention, nothing stands for him. That's why Hashem says, don't be afraid. But the beautiful words are, because if you see, it says like this, Ki biyodcha nasati oisai. I have already given him into your hands. Past tense. Not I will give him, but past tense. Why does it say past tense? Even though the war hasn't been fought yet. Because Hashem is saying to Moshe, I didn't do anything good in the past. He doesn't have any merit. It's as if you've already conquered him. You should not have any worries. And that's what happens. Vayaku, and we see in the Pasuk, Vayaku Oisai, they smote him. And as we see in the last few Pasukim, Ezbanav, Ezkol Amai, his people, his sons, his whole nation, Ad Bilti Hishur Leisarid, until there's no survivor left from him. This was a magnificent war. Absolutely magnificent. Why no survivor? Obviously, they were evil. They could not be left alive. Vayivshu es artzai, and they inherited, they conquered, and they inherited his land. They took possession. And then vayisu b'nei Yisrael, vayachanu b'ar v'smayav, me'ever liyarden yirecha. This is the beautiful, because here they travel, and now they're finally just across, about to enter what they were dreaming of. The land of Israel is right there. Yericha is right across of the Yarden. And that's what we're all hoping. And I just want to share with you, to end off this, I mean, I've made Kabbalah, I'll just share with you the story. This is a story that we tell children. It sounds quite, you know, but who knows? Crazier things happen. What happened here in this war? It says something beyond miraculous. This war was crazy. Oig was not only a giant physically, but he was as much a giant, he was arrogant. And he decided that he has the best way to get rid of the Jewish people. He's not going to any conventional warfare. He's a giant, so he's going to take uproot a rock, some kind of mountain, actually, it wasn't a rock, which was the same, measure as the Jewish people, it says. 3 parsois, whatever it was. It was a massive 10 miles, I don't know, whatever, a massive mountain. He's going to take that mountain and he's going to throw it onto the Jewish people, just destroy them all in one go. Many people would love to do that now. So what does he do? He takes the mountain, uproots it, because he's a giant, and he's carrying it towards the Jewish people. What does Hashem do? This is what the Medrash tells us. Hashem makes little ants, small little ants. And they, as we know what ants do when they go into something, they make a hole. And they ate up a little hole, and what ended up, if you imagine he was holding the mountain on top of his head, all of a sudden there's a hole, and his head goes through the mountain. It's very funny, Medrash, and we'll see next week, because we're not going to see it this week. There are deeper ways to understand it, so we'll see a nice meaning next week. But just even on a simple level, it says Hashem made that Oig had very big teeth, and his teeth, he wanted to extricate himself, but his teeth got stuck, so he couldn't get the mountain off. So he's stuck in the mountain. He can't obviously lift the mountain and throw it on the Jewish people, but that wasn't enough. But he's there, and he's standing there with this big mountain, and the Jewish people see. What does Moshe Rabbeinu do? It says, Oig was 30 amos, each amos 15 feet, whatever, at this point. Or actually, he wasn't 30 amos, he was much more. But his ankle was 30 amos. Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amos tall, about 15 feet tall. Moshe Rabbeinu took an axe, which was 10 amos, jumped 10 amos, it says. Anyways, the bottom line is he held this axe, jumped high, and knocked into Oig's ankle, and he fell backwards, and he died. That's what it says. In other words, Moshe on his own killed this giant without this giant being able to come and do his terrible evil intentions to the Jewish people, destroyed him, and then of course they were able very easily to overcome the rest of the nation, who must have been devastated. And then, as we see, they destroyed them, they literally wiped them out, and they conquered and inherited, and not inherited, so to speak, possessed the land, and were there able to camp there for the next 2 months until they will be entering into the land of Israel. It's 3 months, probably it's a bit more than 2 months. They were there and waited right across from the Yarden. So next week we'll see a little bit of depth to this Medrash, but Mirtz Hashem, we should have these miracles this week.
All
right. So it should be finished.
They're definitely
camping and waiting. Oh my gosh, are they camping and waiting? And now we just need Moshe with his axe and finish it off.
That's
finish them all off.
That's all we need.
Please, God.